Welcome to The Millionaire's Lawyer, where you'll hear leading professionals share expert advice on how to grow your business and sell it for maximum profitability. If you want to learn lawyer-proven strategies for building and exiting your business, then this is the podcast for you. Your host, J.P. McAvoy, is a business lawyer, college professor, and best-selling author who has been assisting clients start, grow, and sell their businesses for millions of dollars for over 15 years. Will yours be the next? Now here's your host, J.P. McAvoy.
Hello and welcome to The Millionaire's Lawyer. Thank you so much for joining us today. We have a really special show, an important one, one that's becoming more timely, more important as we all step more and more into the virtual world, particularly post-COVID-19, as people start to lift their heads up and carry on business. More and more are doing it through online mediums and virtual presences. Today, we've got Sandra Estock on, who is a cybersecurity keynote speaker and an expert with respect to cybersecurity issues. She's an international best-selling author. Her book series is called Happily Ever Cyber, in which she tells war stories or horror stories of people who have had their identities compromised through cyber issues. She's been the victim of that herself. She tells a story, I guess, when she was hauled off of a plane, it was the first time she became aware that she'd been the victim of a cybersecurity issue. She was at one point on the FBI's most wanted list as a human trafficker. Now, she was on it because of a cyber theft issue, and she tells all about that in our discussion today. She holds an MBA and industry certifications in IT, cybersecurity, and data privacy, a real expert and somebody that's aware of the issues that we face in the past and will continue to face in the future. I welcome today Sandra Estock. Sandra, thanks so much for being here. Thanks for being with us in the new COVID-19 reality, right? I mean, you've always thought about the way people do things, and obviously they continue to evolve. How do you see things, and how are they changing now that we're, I guess, working ourselves through COVID-19 and coming out the other side of it?
Thank you, JP, for having me in your show. And, you know, many things have changed in the new reality that we have. We are adopting technology at a very rapid pace. And I will say right now, you know, the situation is really concerning, but we only can do so much. So I try to see every situation as positive as we can. This is an amazing opportunity. We're leveraging technology in new different ways, and we're communicating with each other like we never before. So incredible times.
Yeah, the way we're talking now, right? And that's only continuing to be more so. So what are things that people ought to be not concerned with, but aware of as they begin to communicate more virtually and they expand perhaps their virtual or online presence? What are things that you counsel people or suggest they think about?
Oh, absolutely. You know, great question, because we interact into now a new reality with video conferencing. This is one of your topics. And video conference is fantastic. We can see each other, like right now, we can talk. But at the same time, it creates other problems. And very simple things we all can do is ensure the settings and ensure the privacy of our tools are set properly. And I will recommend you to ensure, like, muting your guests before they enter a meeting, or making sure that you control your meeting. You put a password into your meeting. We have seen a lot of different cyber monsters, how I call them, crashing meetings and, you know, either interrupting you, trying to disturb your organization. And, you know, one easy way to prevent that is having a password and having the control who accesses your meeting. You know, that will really, really help any business right now that is going virtual.
Yeah. So anybody going virtual, obviously protect the environment. Mm-hmm. So as they invite people into their online environment, what about for businesses themselves? Or, are there risks that people, the way that they have, they're posting things or the way that their internet presence appears, like their websites, are they under pressure right now as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We have seen an influx of COVID-19 attacks, and anyone is a target right now, whether you are a business, small business, large business, or even as an individual. So right now, you know, we're using technology for everything, mm-hmm. but we are also living this reality. And COVID-19 attacks are very common. Fake websites are popping up. I was just reading this morning the stats, and 120,000 websites, fake websites, are showing up every day. And, you know, the stats of January versus where we are today, it's like 30,000% more malware and more, you know, campaigns with the intention of stealing our identities and our information. Mm-hmm. So this is the time to be very diligent and be open to everything you receive, be very careful of links and that kind of things, and just go to the source of information if you want to see something COVID-19 related.
Yes, yeah. Be wary of the source or where you're getting your information from. Now, this is something you've been thinking about for a while, obviously much before COVID-19. How did you get into this originally? Tell us some of your story and how you found yourself into this business.
Absolutely. Well, you know, cybersecurity is so in-depth to me because it's a personal. It's personal to me. And it happened when I was returning from visiting my mom in Colombia. And as, you know, we're landing, the pilot announces that Homeland Security officers were boarding the plane. And I gave my passport. And next thing I know, I'm the only one that is marched off the plane. Obviously, I didn't know what was happening. So confused. My husband is waiting for me in Chicago, and I'm about to miss my connecting flight. And 10 hours later, JP, I'm handed back my passport, and it's revoked. Again, I didn't know what was happening. I was able to come home. A few weeks later, I'm back in Venezuela, my native country, and trying to get a new visa. And I have the support of my former employer and attorney and lawyers. And, you know, you get yourself surrounded of many different resources to help you out because you don't know what's going on. And I'm in the interview at the U.S. Embassy, and they kept asking me questions about China. Why was I in China? You know, who's my contact in China? Who do I know there? And I didn't know what they were talking about.
This is when you were hauled off the plane or back in Venezuela. What happened when you got taken off the plane?
When I was taken off the plane, I was in that room, you know, that room.
Right. So an examination
for 10 hours.
10 hours of questions.
For 10 hours, yes. And then I was allowed to go to the room, but my passport got revoked and I have to immediately leave the country. I was able to go and talk to my employer, work with the attorneys, get back to my country and start working on a new visa. And that's when they start asking me questions about China. And what happened at the end in the embassy, I'm told that a smuggler in China was smuggling women into the U.S. using my identity.
Wow.
And that's why they took me out of the plane. They scored me. They didn't know I was really me. Now, you know, I return home. Everything is fine. I'm good. At the time, I used to travel a lot for my job. So I'm back in the plane in 2 weeks. I'm returning now from Europe. I'm not thinking about anything. I just, you know, land, get off the plane, get to passport control, and boom, I'm back into that room, Jay.
Really? So same story again? The information hadn't crossed over, or were they asking the same questions again?
Yeah. So what happened is I have to prove from that point forward, every single time that I travel internationally, that I was really me. That meant every single time I was in that room, I was escorted by TSA. I have to prove that I was really me. And that lasted for 6 years. Wow. You can imagine, nobody wanted to travel with me, no my coworkers, my husband, nobody, because they didn't know how long it would take me for me to go out of the room or to, you know, missing connections. And, you know, that happened a lot. And like I said, 6 years later, when I became a U.S. citizen, I was able to change my name and finally I'm free.
So that's what you've done, or ultimately, I guess the best solution or the solution you chose was to just actually change your names and stay away from the identity that was attracting all the negative attention?
Yes, because at the time when I Googled my name, everything was in Chinese. And I had companies were using my name as a business. So there was an export company between China and Latin America exporting who knows what under my name and several business like that. So with my new U.S. citizenship, I didn't want my name to be attached to that. So you have a choice when you become a U.S. citizen to do that. And I took that chance for the greater good.
Exactly. No, I definitely would, Sandra. And you were already working in cybersecurity, right? You have an IT background as well?
I was working in IT at the time. And I can say, JP, I didn't know I was a victim of identity theft. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what was going on. This was in 2006. There was not so much information about cyber criminals. And, you know, we were not in the world of the online where we know today, back then. So, you know, it didn't occur to me until years later when I moved from IT to cybersecurity, I really understood my situation. And I start connecting the dots and really understand who's behind cybercrime, who's behind identity theft, what happens, and everything that comes about cybersecurity.
So who is behind it then? Are people just listening, give us a general sense of the type of people that are doing this and I guess what the outcome of it is.
Yeah, I call them the cyber monsters, and there are four that I explain. But before I go into that, JP, I have a question for you. So when you were a child, were you afraid of the dark? Like, did you think like the monsters under your bed or the boogeyman was coming? And did you have anything like that?
I remember thinking that, you know, there might be monsters in my closet, I think, mm-hmm. if I recall. Yeah. So yeah, some thoughts that perhaps there was a monster in my closet. Yes.
Well, I have two. So I was 7 years old and I was terrified of the monsters under the bed. And in my country, Vela, they were called El Coco. And I was terrified of El Coco. So I developed this technique to keep El Coco or the monsters under my bed away from me. And it was like, if as long as I touch my mom with my two hands and my left foot, and I'm trying to show you that, as long as I touch my mom like that, I was protected. And of course, you know, we grew up and the monsters under the bed don't exist. Mm-hmm. Now the monsters under the bed are behind a keyboard and behind a digital asset, a phone, a tablet. And they are very real. They can be anywhere. Some of them are very powerful. Some of them could be pretending to be your grandma when in reality they are that wolf that want to eat you. And for businesses in particular, we have seen so much attack in cyberspace. So there is one particular monster, and I define all these four monsters. I know you asked me who they are.
Yeah.
They are in the book, but I think I would like to talk about one monster in particular, and his name is Insimo, and it's called the insider monster. And it's that person that has access to your information in your business, that it could be your employee, your contractors, your vendors, you know, your partner, your spouses, your friends, that somehow they have a lot of information, and either by accident or with an intention, they could potentially harm your organization. So that's one cyber monster that is very important in the business world. Because sometimes we're looking only for the external monsters or the external factors, but sometimes they are inside. And
yeah, so be sensitive to, obviously, people mm-hmm. that have sensitive information, and be aware of where your information is, obviously, for those who are known. What about foreign attackers or people that are trying to, going back to where you began this discussion, looking to poke holes into perhaps your, you know, mm-hmm. into your web presence or your online presence? How do they emerge? How do you find them? How do you prevent yourself from being harmed by them?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are two more groups, very important for businesses. One is cybercrime. It's called Sacrimo in my book. And Sacrimo, it's a business. It's like, you know, you have a quote or a target every month for how much you're going to sell, how many customers you're going to get, mm-hmm. how, you know, in the same way, organized crime has created a business, and they have a particular number of identities they need to steal, or companies they have to hack, and it's a business. And the product, it's you. Mm-hmm. It's your money. And because of that, you know, the reality is cybercrime is growing. And all criminal organizations that in the past, you know, were traditional bank robbers or drug dealers, they have found cybercrime as the best place to commit their crimes. You know, you're behind a computer, you can hire talented people, and you can be very, very behind, you know, behind the scenes and still make profit.
Do they ever get caught? Are they getting caught at all? Are there places where people are being caught and, I guess, punished for their crimes?
They are. And, you know, the FBI, the Interpol, and all these groups of, you know, law enforcement are always working to dismantle bands and criminal gangs. It's just very hard, but absolutely they get caught. It happens, and you see some of them in the news. Not as easy as, you know, regular crime, but it can still happen.
They do get caught. Yeah. So you write about this in your book, obviously, ways to protect yourself from this. So
yes,
for a business person, obviously protecting sensitive materials. But what about, you know, for people, as they say, for their online presence, where there mm-hmm. might be people poking holes through firewalls and things like that? How do you suggest that they protect themselves that way?
Yeah, the best way to protect from holes, and I love that you bring that up. I use it as an example all the time. If you have holes in your home or in your clothing, you always want to fix them. You don't want to show up, or you don't want your house to be with holes in your walls, because anyone can sneak through those holes. And in the same way, your devices, your computer, your phone have holes that are created by all the applications and programs that are running. And when you don't update them, the holes become bigger and more. So the more you keep your devices and your computers up to date, the more you're going to close those holes and the less chances you're going to have for cyber monsters to sneak through your devices. So that's one of the biggest advices that I give everyone, especially today with what we are seeing with COVID-19. Update your phones, update your computer. This is a perfect time to take that step and control your online world.
Would you leave them as automatic updates, or do you go through and do it manually?
You can leave it out, you know, in auto, but usually when you have major updates, it will always ask you to still go and do install. So for small and minor changes, yes, the auto will work, but when you have a new release, you will still have to go and do it. What I do is I have a reminder in my calendar, and every week I go and I just say, okay, check for updates, and it takes me 2 seconds to go to my phone, settings, you know, security updates or updates, and press install, download, and that's it. And I leave it and I move on into something else.
Come on to the next thing, yeah, so you make sure it's all there. Now, you mentioned before as well, for the settings on things, the privacy settings, do you limit what different applications have access to you? Do you limit the amount of information you put online as well, or you allow access to?
Absolutely. I limit, yes, all of it. Why? Because if you think about all the information that you have in your social media profiles, for example, if I am targeting you and I want to guess your password, and a lot of people uses their pet's name or their, you know, if you have all that information, or when you do your questions in your banking, sometimes you put, you know, who's your brother, who's your mom, you know, all that information can be taken from your social media. You know, I've seen a lot of folks that have their birthday, you know, their birthday, it's in their social media. Now I know your birthday, I know your address. You know, I can impersonate you easily. I can call the bank, or I can call, you know, a provider and pretend to be you. And we're seeing a lot of those calls happening where someone pretends to be you and they take over your accounts.
Right, right. So, I mean, as you say, think about what you're putting in your social media, because we do see people keep a lot of information there. Would you put, for something like a birthday, would you change the birth date, or would you just not have it accessed?
You can set the settings, like you said before, the privacy settings. So you can just say, I don't want anyone to see this particular information, and limit, you know, to only you or your friends. So that way you have control over your information. So
yeah,
always
so
go to the settings, and I will say, put a reminder in your calendar. I'm always, because those privacy settings might change, and as they do updates in the social media platforms, you want to make sure that you're not exposing more information than what you want to expose.
Share. Of course. Are there particular ones to stay away from? We're hearing a lot. I mean, we're recording this by Zoom right now, but we're hearing a lot about the security issues with Zoom right now. Are there certain applications or companies that you stay away from?
I will say, you know, every tool, every application has its flaws, and nothing is perfect. My advice will be, ensure that, you know, you're using the latest update. And yes, we have seen a lot of issues with Zoom. If you update to the latest, most of those issues are addressed. And there are some privacy concerns. And of course, with that, I will say, again, go to your privacy settings and see how you're sharing the information, who you're sharing that information with. And right now, you know, these tools are also the tools that are helping us to connect. So it's that, you know, dilemma that we all live is, you know, we have to use technology, but we have to be very aware of how are we using technology.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. So
Absolutely.
We need to use it. We want to be communicating with each other, and we accept some risk as a consequence of doing that. How about protecting yourself with password keepers and things like that? Do you suggest people use those? Is there any potential for those themselves to get hacked? Like, what's your theory or your thinking about password keepers?
Oh, I love this question. Love it. Because for many years, I have used my password to work for me. And what I mean by that, JP, is my password is the phrase that includes my declaration, my inspiration, my affirmation, whatever I care, you know, for in life. And it always lifts my day. And I have to type my password. And I'm a believer in password managers because they are designed only to protect passwords. So they are going to do it much better than me just having a spreadsheet in the cloud with my passwords. Mm-hmm. So they are going to have encryption. They are going to have features, you know, as a normal person, I won't have access to that kind of technology. Could they get hacked? Absolutely. Anyone can get hacked, but they will be able to react and protect me faster than if I get hacked and my passwords are all gone. Mm. The other benefit on passwords is, you know, sometimes if you lose one password for this particular account, but if you're using now the same password in 10 accounts, it's like, you know, lost all the access to all the accounts. Or mm-hmm. all those accounts. With a password manager, you lose one password, you can change that password, or you can change all the passwords. And it keeps you more real. If you're reusing a password, it will tell you, it will give you a score. And, you know, definitely it's a tool that we want to have in the toolbox because it's the best way that we can write, you know, protect. And again, I'd recommend use your password to work for you, to, you know, especially right now with so much fear in the world. So good to, when you are typing that password, that phrase means something and means something's very nice. And you have to type that so many times. At the end of the day, you're so happy.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So it has two positive outcomes, protecting security. And then also, as you say, giving you some positive energy as you carry on your business throughout the day. That's great mm-hmm. advice there. Now, you've really experienced some hardship while traveling here. What are some things that you'd suggest that people be wary of during traveling? I think I noticed from some of your website materials that you, among other things, you describe how not to or be sensitive to how you're using USB cables as an example, right?
Yes. Yeah. Wi-Fi, you know, public devices in general, because again, they are public, so anyone can access them. Mm-hmm. So when we connect, it's like if someone comes to you in the middle of the street and hands you a bite of particular food, will you take it? You don't know where it's from, you don't know who, you know, mm-hmm. who was in that plate, or you know what happened. So in the same way, you don't know who was using that USB device or that smart charger before you. What is in there? And it could be a potential center of infection. So when you put your phone or your tablet, now you get infected and now your identity is compromised and you have to go through the process to clean that up. The same is true when you travel to hotels and, you know, any cafes, any public Wi-Fi or any public charger obviously imposes a risk.
Is that even the same for airport Wi-Fi? And, you know,
absolutely.
So they don't monitor that at all. There's no way to know, or there's nobody looking to see if that's safe for the users?
They are. And I think, again, like the question you had before is that double source. You always have to give it a stake. It's a base risk decision. Sometimes you have to use a Wi-Fi. If I have to connect to the airport Wi-Fi, there are ways to do it in the most safer way. So number one, don't transfer any information, sensitive information while you are in that Wi-Fi. Make sure that you have a VPN, virtual private network set up. So at least you can encrypt that connection that is happening from your phone. Now, it won't protect you from connecting to an infected device. You know, there are ways you could do. If you are a frequent traveler, you can come back and wipe your phone and just start over. You have your backups in the cloud, so you can, you know, this, if you are in a place that you sense you were at risk, don't come back and connect to your computers. Reset your phone, and that way, you know, you can have peace of mind.
Mm-hmm. Those are all good tips for people traveling. So we're talking technology, but the way you use credit cards or debit cards and things like that as you travel, what are some advice you offer to people there?
Absolutely. Anytime that we give our ID and our credit card, don't give those two documents at the same time. And what I mean is by that is, you know, you are in a hotel, you're registering, you give both documents and you don't know what's happening behind the counter. Mm-hmm. And anyone could take a picture easily of those two documents. And now they are by side by side. So what I always do when I'm in a hotel or shopping, I always hold into my ID and I only show my credit card information unless they have to swipe my card. But I always have this holding my ID. They don't have to touch it. They don't have to have it. And at least that way I'm controlling how much information they have about me at a given time. So always just keep your ID, your passport with you at all times.
Yeah, it's again, being aware or being sensitive mm-hmm. to where sensitive information is, right? How about things like Bitcoin and, you know, the different digital currencies that we're using? Any thoughts on those for people that might be exploring with those right now?
Again, you know, there is risk in everything. You know, it's a choice. I will just say, if you're using electronic currency, just be aware of where your passwords are, how you protect that information, who has access to your phone, and make sure that you keep your phone and your devices where you access those cryptocurrencies protected.
Again, if you want to use them, right? It's yes. like we said before, you have to be aware that there's a cost or a price for using them and just be vigilant yeah. about Absolutely. How you're protecting them on the way through. Now, what about for businesses? We, on this podcast, talk a lot to business owners, people that might be growing their businesses or preparing them for a sale. Digital assets and IT related assets or obviously have some value for somebody selling. What can a business owner be doing to perhaps even increase the value of their IP, their intellectual property, and their software assets they're developing potentially for a sale?
Mm-hmm. Great question, because this is exactly what can be, make the difference between, you know, having a very big price for your business or, you know, becoming a problem for somebody. And I will say, you know, a self-assessment is the best tool that we all can use. And we all use self-assessments for many things. Like I go to my doctor and I, you know, get checked for my cholesterol level or my blood pressure. And I get those numbers. And based on those numbers, I take action. Either mm-hmm. I have to change my diet mm-hmm. or take a pill or do more exercises. And my doctor checked me, you know, 6 months from now or a year from now. And I always, you know, you always use that number, that baseline as a reference of your health. Well, in the same way, that check, that assessment is the health check that you do in your business. And if you're planning to sell your business, if you're starting your business, if you're in the middle of your business, it's always good to know how's your security. Who has access to your information? How are your employees using your password or their passwords? Where are you storing the most sensitive information? Like if you are a financial company and you have social security numbers and bank accounts and all kind of sensitive information, who has access to that? Where is that stored? Is it in the cloud? Is it local? Do you back up that information? I mean, those are just simple questions that you will get through an assessment. And once you know the results, then you'll have actions. And like in my case or in our case, if you go to the doctor, you get actions and you make changes and you test again. And I think, you know, that way, if you see your business as, you know, you'll see your body and making sure that it's the best fit and the best health it can be. You know, when it's time to sell it, you're going to get, you know, the biggest value, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's good advice there. It's just another asset, as you say. And so if you're conscious about how you develop that asset as well, in addition to any other business assets you might be developing, then it's mm-hmm. clearly going to be more valuable, or others will see that you've developed it and be obviously more willing to consider paying for that as well. You write about a lot of these things in your book. You want to take a minute to describe to our audience a bit, well, I guess a bit more about your book and some of the things that you describe in there that might be of value to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. So my book, Happily Ever Cyber, it's a quest for how to protect yourself, to protect your family, to protect your business, and to protect, you know, you individually from hackers, scammers, and cyber monsters. And I have a different approach in cybersecurity because I believe that when with stories, with anecdotes, and an easy language, there's so much we can get. And when we make that personal connection, when we find that common cyber story, it's much easier to take action. And I am also a speaker, JP, and every time I leave a stage, the most amazing thing and the most beautiful thing that I enjoy is people come and say, wow, I loved your story. This is what happened to my grandma. This is what happened to my business partner. Or this is what happened in my company. And it's not about me anymore. It's about their stories. And they find those stories. And now they say, what can I do? You know, how can I improve my kids' security, my parents' security, my business security? Now the conversation changes because now we made it personal.
What are some of the most outlandish or outrageous stories that people have shared with you? I mean, yours is pretty extraordinary. What are some of the other ones that you've heard along the way?
Well, it's so many. I actually, I'm going to relaunch my book. It's going to be republished, and I'm going to add 7 more stories, and it's going to be out in the next 3 weeks, and that will be there. And there are all business owners or small businesses and what happened to them either on their website or, you know, using Zoom or using some of the video conference technologies and how it impacted them. And, you know, there is a story about a scam and someone that their identity was, I don't want to give it too much because I want you to read it in the book. And if you have a story that you want to be featured, you know, write me also an email or send it to me through my website and we'll be happy to check those. And we will be incorporating business stories, family stories, and personal stories of cybersecurity because the more we share, the more we can help.
That's right. It's educating people along the way, isn't it? So how would they get in touch with you if they were interested in learning more or as you just offered, have a story to share?
Yeah, if they have a story to share, my email, they can write me to at happyeversyber@sandraistock.com. They can also go to my website, sandraistock.com, and they can also go to happilyeversyber.com.
Great. Okay. And you've got a wealth of resources there, as we talked about earlier. Now, come on, give us a little teaser. Give us one of those stories. Just tease us a little bit with something that we might be reading in the book.
No, they are some good, juicy stories. I will say, you know, the one that impressed me the most, or not impressed me, impact me the most is one of the stories that has to do with extortion. And in that story, when that person found out that what happened to him has happened to others, he went to the police because a 17-year-old boy went through a similar situation and he couldn't handle the pressure and he actually took his life.
Oh my goodness, that's so tragic.
It is very tragic. And I think this made, you know, this story so incredible. I mean, sad, obviously, but so brave because sometimes you don't hear these stories very often. And not every person is in different state of minds and different situations in their life. So we don't know where you are when you get into a cyber attack or into a hack or into an identity theft situation. And if you are dealing already with a stressful time, like right now with COVID-19, we are all doing that. Getting hit by an identity theft or a ransomware or a cyber attack into your company or your personal life is an additional stress. And, you know, it's understanding that. And I think that's the most powerful tool we can use right now, which is knowledge and making sure that we're protecting what we need to protect because we don't know, you know, what can happen down the road to us or to those around us.
Yeah, protect those around us as well. As you say, you don't know when it's going to strike or where it might strike. So to be sensitive, protecting yourself at all times. Do you subscribe much to or think there's a lot of value in having cybersecurity insurance or identity theft insurance? Because you see a wealth of products being offered on those fronts now as well.
I do, you know, personally, because obviously it's a liability, but it's like any insurance. Will you have insurance in your car? I mean, you do sometimes, it's not about how you drive, but, you know, when you are in the road, you have other drivers and other, you know, collaterals that can happen just you being there. So I think in the same way, you have to see cyber insurance for your business and for your personal liabilities, because it might not be you, but it could be something that you just get, I guess, by an addition or by somebody else attached into a situation. And you have now the protection, like you will have car insurance for.
That's right. So same thing, protecting against an unforeseen risk or liability. That's great. So Sandra, thank you so much for being here today. I mean, with these podcasts, to leave people with something that they might be able to take action or steps for immediately that might impact their life or their business in a positive way. You've given us a wealth of information here today, and I know you've got a lot of it in your book as well, which is about to be relaunched. If we were to leave this podcast today with one thing that we can offer to listeners, to business owners, to people looking to protect themselves in the cyber world or beyond, I guess, as they do anything IT related, what would you leave them with? What kind of suggestion would you make to them on a personal and then a business level?
Excellent question, JP. I will say I have created 3 tips or ways for you to protect your identity or your family's identities. And if you go to happilyevercyber.com, you can get those 3 simple ways. And they are just the beginning. Just a small teaser on that is there are ways for you to know whether you have been a victim of a hack or a cyber attack with your email address. And when you know that, then you can go and take the action and either change your password or don't use that account for a financial access anymore and just create a new password. So in that 3 steps, you can see how can you access, how can you know if you are being a victim of identity theft or not identity theft, of a data breach. And if you are, my encourage is for you to go and change those passwords and lock down your information the best way you can.
So important, isn't it? Yeah, as you say, it's so important. Be aware, the way we began this show today, be aware of your sensitive information is and be sensitive to how it's being used and obviously protecting it in the best way you possibly can. Sandra, thanks so much for being here today. Thanks so much for sharing your tips, your tricks, your ways of protecting yourselves. We'll have all the information you mentioned here available in the show notes as well. And we look forward to the update on the book as well, where we'll get some more of that wonderful information.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, JP, and it was a pleasure to be in your show.
Great. And we'll see you next time. Thanks so much for joining us here today on The Millionaire's Lawyer, and we look forward to the next time. Thanks all now.
Thanks for listening to The Millionaire's Lawyer. Please subscribe and rate on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. To get your business millionaire assessed and to access the wide variety of resources that we offer in addition to this podcast, go to jpmcavoy.com. That's jpmcavoy.com.